Welcome to Political Rewind. It's 3:06 on a Friday afternoon. We are coming to you, as we always do, live from the Midtown Atlanta studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting. We are going to do on Political Rewind this week what I think it is safe to say is going to be a gigantic data dump. We have so much data, polling data from Georgia, from the key battleground states across the country, crosstabs that'll tell you about which voter groups are favoring which candidates in the presidential race, in the Senate race here in Georgia. It's going to be an interesting hour of conversation. Joining me, as he always does, Jim Galloway, the political writer of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He's been crunching the numbers from the AJC poll, and we're going to get to those in a minute.
We are the green eyeshade group. we're just accountants here today.
But you know what? We're going to make poll numbers really interesting today. Billy Linville, he's a Democratic strategist. He's back at a Political Rewind microphone. Thanks for being here, Billy. Ashley Bell. He was on the phone with us from Cleveland when he was a delegate at the Republican National Convention. And Ashley, it's a real pleasure to have you here in the studio.
Good to be back.
Thanks
with you,
for coming. And Mark Rountree, he's a Republican pollster, handles lots. His firm handles lots and lots of Republican primarily candidates. He also is the pollster for WSB TV. And we're going to talk about his interesting set of numbers from this week. Mark, thank you for being here.
And thank you as well.
Before we get to our conversation, if you heard the show on Wednesday, you've already heard this, but I want to give you a chance again today in case you didn't call us. At the end of August, we're going to try something new on Political Rewind. We're going to do essentially a focus group show that will feature you. People who listen to the show and who have a lot of opinions about this presidential race, the races in Georgia, and a lot of other political issues that we will talk about in our focus group. We're going to pick this group by asking you to tell us why you should be on that show. So we have a phone line. Senior producer Jenny Amont has set up a line that you can call in. You can record a message telling us why you think you should be part of the focus group. Leave your name, obviously, and give us contact information. Make your message short, because long messages mean you'll talk too much on our show, and we don't want that. The number is 678-757-4472. I encourage you to do it pretty quickly, because I've got to tell you, we were pretty overwhelmed on Wednesday, the first day we gave this number out. So if you really want to be part of the show, you really ought to try to call that number soon. 678-757-4472. Leave your name, contact information. We will take it from there. All right, Jim Galloway, let's start with you, because your numbers are brand new. You released numbers today. In the presidential race and the Senate race. You want to start with the presidential numbers?
Right, right. These were released at 7 a.m. this morning. We got them late last night. These are Georgia specific here. If you only run the two-person race, Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton comes in with leaners at 48% to Trump's 44%.
I don't mean to be geeky, but make sure our listeners know what a leaner is.
Okay, a leaner is, okay, we ask, our polls often ask, who are you going to vote for? If people don't know, we push them a little bit and say, all right, who are you leaning toward? And that's often, yeah, it's a good guess that that's exactly where they're going to end up by November.
And Mark, as a pollster, as a guy who does this for a living, leaners are an important part of your polling, any pollster's operation, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So we got.
Thank you, Mark.
We got a 48.
Glad to add to the topic.
48-44 race. If it's just Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, with Hillary Clinton in the lead, but. That's not what's on the Georgia ballot, okay? We've also got we could have a Green Party candidate on there.
Joel Stein.
We will definitely have Libertarian Gary Johnson on there. So once you throw Gary Johnson into that mix, the race changes significantly. It goes 43% Clinton, 39% Trump, and 12% Gary Johnson.
Well, let me make sure. It's either as a two-person or a three-person race, it's still a four-point margin.
Still a four-point margin.
Favoring Hillary. But Gary Johnson knocks her numbers down a little bit.
Gary, he knocks her numbers down a little bit. He takes, it's interesting, he takes away, in terms of independence, he robs both the upper two candidates of independence kind of in the same manner. But what you see is you see more Republicans drifting over, three Republicans for every one Democrat drifting into Gary Johnson's camp.
So let's stop right there before we give out some more numbers. And let me get all of you engaged in this part of the conversation, because we're going to get your numbers in a minute, Mark. And I think your numbers are fairly consistent in that your August 1st numbers show this is a virtual tie, too. Isn't that right?
It is a tie.
Okay. And the AJC numbers are within the margin of error, so you've got a statistical tie, essentially.
The big difference between ours and Mark's numbers is we show Gary Johnson a little bit stronger.
Okay. All right. So all that said, Billy, Ashley, Jim, and Mark, is that remarkable that in this red state, which has not voted for a Democratic candidate for president since Bill Clinton in 1992, it didn't even go Democrat for Clinton in 96, at this stage in the race, coming out of the conventions, you have apparently a statistical tie. Toss-up question. Anybody?
I think it's remarkable, but it's not surprising. I think we've been predicting this for weeks, that Georgia is going to be competitive. And I think these numbers are proving it. And I think they're probably moving in Hillary's direction, especially given the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I wouldn't go as far as to say that Hillary's got a chance of winning Georgia yet, but I think she's got enough of a momentum to force some money to be spent here in Georgia. I think when you look at what you don't see is the enthusiasm behind both sides' voters. I think Donald Trump supporters in this state are on fire, and they're going to show up, and they're going to bring everybody they can. I can't say that in this state I see the same enthusiasm from Democrats. They don't like Trump, but I can't really say the enthusiasm gap is on the Democrat side.
It also does. And at Landmark Communications, we poll frequently all over Georgia. It's something that is important to note. I had a friend of mine that pointed this out. We went back and looked at the Libertarian vote back in 2014 as well, and the Libertarians were polling about a little bit higher than they are now. The way campaigns work in Georgia is that the Democrats will poll stronger in the summertime, is what we've seen, and it declines throughout the fall.
Why do you think that is? What accounts for that phenomenon?
Well, a lot of the undecided voters in Georgia are Caucasian, and they and the Republicans have simply run better campaigns, and that is that's where a lot of votes have gone historically toward Republicans, is from Caucasians. The state is changing, and this is something that again, we at Landmark have been very vocal about, and this will help Billy and his team over the years that are coming. The state is changing very quickly demographically and is becoming arguably the most diverse state in the country. We think that 37% of the voters that are going to vote this November are going to be minority, of which 32% will be African American. African Americans have, of course, historically given 95-96% of their vote as a virtual monolithic vote to Democratic candidates. And the larger that vote gets, the better it's going to help Democrats. I know that that's not news to you, but that is at the same time a big change.
But it's important to discuss. You know, Ashley, when you were on the show from Cleveland, mm-hmm. We talked about the fact that I think you were one of, 18, less than two dozen African-American delegates across the country to the Republican National Convention.
Yeah.
So given that, and Jim, your polling in the crosstabs, I think, as most polls do, shows overwhelming support for Clinton among African-Americans. Can that be turned around in any way here, Ashley?
You know, the good thing about it is that Donald Trump's not on the ballot by himself. I think people like Johnny Isaacson have some favorable opinion in the African-American community, more so than you would see from most Republicans, just because he's been there so long and he's done a good job from most people's eyes. So I think Donald Trump he's going to have a tough time getting more than 10%. But I'm surprised to see in some of these polling he is at 10%. He's doing better here in Georgia amongst African-Americans than some of the zeros I'm seeing in Ohio and Virginia.
Yeah, a couple things. First of all, for our listeners here, remember that in presidential elections, they're not like U.S. Senate races or any other race in Georgia. These are plurality races. You only have to win a plurality of the vote to take all of the electoral votes, the 16 electoral votes that are out there. So we need to mention that.
You don't have to pass the 50% threshold,
you
have to do in statewide races.
Right.
Or local races in many cases.
And let me point you to 1992. when Bill Clinton took Georgia, he was the last Democrat to take Georgia. He took it with 43% of the vote. George H.W. Bush had 42%. It was a very close thing, and Ross Perot had 13%. Those are numbers that were they're kind of similar to what the AJC poll is looking at right now.
What are some of the other crosstabs that any of you? I know we don't have a lot of data yet. The Constitution, we're going to be able to see more of it as you unwind it over the next couple of days. What are some of the other crosstabs that you are seeing, Billy? You saw something in the younger voters.
Yeah, I think something that is unique in this election and something we haven't seen in decades is, and that is, the activism by young voters. And ages 18 to 39, Hillary leads by double digits over Donald Trump in Georgia, and I think throughout the state. And this is going to play a very critical role because they have young people are more motivated this time than they have been, I think, in many recent elections. So I think you're going to see a higher voter turnout among that group.
Yeah, now, and building on that, if you look at Mark's WSB poll, if you look, Jim Barksdale, it trails Isaacson pretty much in every category except for one specific one, and those are the 18 to 39 aged voters.
Do we assume to some extent that has to do with the fact that younger voters aren't as aware of Johnny Isaacson, and I mean that in all caps, as older voters who have watched him over the years, Mark?
Well, there's two reasons. That's one. Of course, the advertising that would take place would theoretically move people that are less familiar with Isaacson. The other is that there has been an explosion of change demographically in Georgia, particularly among this group. A very large percentage of them are African-American or minority, and that, again, it's historically has helped the Democrats. If the Republicans don't figure out a way to break that voting bloc, then that is going to be the future of Georgia. The Republicans will lose control in the next 4 years if that does not change.
Do we have breakdowns, crosstabs on women and where women stand in this race? Mark,
if
in
I may
your
throw
poll?
In this part, the most important thing, even more important than crosstabs, Republicans, if you go back in time, I'm going to just give a few numbers to you and to the folks listening. McCain got 52% of the vote in Georgia. Governor Deal, the first time, got 53%. Again, these are top-of-the-ticket races.
Are we talking about McCain's first 2000 race?
Or, 2008. 2008, I apologize.
Okay, go
against
ahead.
Obama, he got 52%. He did carry it. Governor Deal, in the general election, got 53%. In 2012, again, Romney got 53%. In 2014, Deal and Perdue got 53%. That is the technical ceiling, so to speak, that Republicans can get at the top of the ticket. Now, some of their down-ticket statewide candidates can do better because they're running against absolutely destitute challengers and have name recognition. But at the top of the ticket, when everybody has money to spend, that's the number, it's 53. If the worry that Republicans have is that there's two of them. One, that, of course, Trump is not focusing on Hillary. He seems to be fighting with everybody but Hillary Clinton these days, and that has hurt his numbers. And the question is if that's temporary or not. I think it is somewhat temporary, but we'll see. The other, though, and this is the last important part. I don't want to dominate the call here, but the other part is that as minority voters are growing, if you take African-Americans, over 60% of African-Americans that are active voters are also female. It's a cultural phenomena that is important, and we can look for legal reasons, social reasons as to why that is, but that is. So we're projecting that 57% of Georgians this year will be also female. The female vote's where it's at, and it escapes a lot of people.
And what did your poll find with women voters? Do you have it handy? You want us to come back?
In the most recent, women voters are going for Clinton 49 to 46. It is not as strong as one might assume.
Yeah, in our poll, it's 51% for Clinton.
Okay.
So,
let me unpack something else about this that I find fascinating. Mark, your poll, Channel 2, published your poll, broadcast your poll on Monday, on Monday of this week. Your poll came out today. Mark, that means you were in the field over the weekend, perhaps, or late last week, right?
Correct.
Okay. Whereas you were in the field this week, Jim.
Yeah. Our poll is thoroughly post-convention.
Okay. So here's why I find that interesting that you came to the same numbers. There are people who might have looked at your poll and said, well, Trump had the worst possible. It couldn't have gotten worse for Trump this week while your people were in the field. He didn't have a great week last week, but it wasn't quite as awful as this week. And yet, you too show an even, you know, you show it as a neck and neck race. Is that analysis
it's
at all?
It's been a neck and neck race. We polled it in May, released it in May. Trump was up by one. We released it again after the Republican convention. Trump was up by two. Released it after the Democratic convention. Trump was tied. We were in the field Saturday and Sunday. I think Jim's poll may have been beginning.
But to his point, I mean, don't know or no answer on our polls, 2%. Sides are being chosen right now.
Yes.
Okay.
We're finding the same.
Okay, so Billy and Ashley, Georgia has not been in play. Despite the efforts of the Georgia Democratic Party, DuBose Porter and his folks, Hillary Clinton has not yet said she's going to invest in Georgia. Neither has Donald Trump. Do you think these polling numbers today are going to be the incentive, both of you, for your parties to get into Georgia and really actively compete for this state?
Go ahead.
I think that Hillary Clinton will definitely invest in Georgia on the ground.
Well, that's good, because all she's done so far is take money out of the state, as has Donald Trump for the most part.
But significantly, that is important, because if Donald Trump has to spend his resources in Georgia,
play defense
that just
in a state, he should win.
The greater problem that he has around the country.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that you're going to see Hillary spend money here. I don't think Donald Trump will. We're just not raising enough money to keep up with the Democrats. We got started late. There's other states I think are going
to
be
in play. You raised $80 million this period.
You know
not
what?
Bad.
It takes about $1 billion to run for president. So I don't know how good it's going to do is. But I don't think it would take a poll that would show Hillary up outside the margin of error for the Republicans to say, now it's time to dump money in Georgia. And then if that happens, we got a big problem anyway.
But I think Gary Johnson changes that equation. That's the whole point of Gary Johnson. Is that he makes it possible for Hillary Clinton to win with 43% or 44% of the vote. And that means Republicans really do have to worry.
And many of our Tea Party friends do align with libertarians. So that is a part of the party that Donald Trump has not consolidated as much as we would like. And so, yeah, Gary Johnson can be in play with our Tea Party friends.
I tend to think, again, we polled the U.S. Senate race here at Landmark, and we've polled, of course, the presidential. The one that they will actually look more toward is probably the U.S. Senate race. If Johnny Isaacson's numbers have not improved by early September, I think you will start to see – I do think they will improve, by the way, from where they are now. But I think you'll start to see then the investment coming that Billy refers to.
All right. I do want to go to – I do want to stay as much as possible for a while with presidential. But as we've brought up the Isaacson race a couple times without, I don't think, yet giving the figures that both of your organizations have. Jim?
Okay. Now, AJC poll – we only polled Isaacson and Barksdale. We've got the Libertarian Alan Buckley, who's been in this race before. He was in the Saxby-Chambliss race. So you have Isaacson at 48, Barksdale 42. I suspect if we had added Buckley to that to the list, that it would look very much like the presidential contest.
What do you have at Landmark, Mark?
We have Isaacson at 46, Barksdale at 41, Buckley at 5, undecided at 8.
Okay. What I'm hearing from you all is that it is conceivable, if your polls tell us a true picture right now, and I know, Mark, you've said you think those will change, but the snapshot today, this whole, if the election were held today, it is conceivable that Johnny Isaacson, one of the most beloved elected officials in the state, could be in a runoff. Is that right?
You know, it's interesting you say that, because as a politically very aware person, your opinion would be that he's beloved. A lot of people don't know who the heck he is. So you're kind of in a bubble, and I don't mean that in a negative way to you.
Oh, no, believe me, everybody tells me that.
The people at this table all know that this is one of the greatest gentlemen serving in the U.S. Senate. I mean, forget about politics. This is a gentleman, and people genuinely like him when they get to know him. The problem he'll have is the problem that a lot of U.S. senators have, that they're only on the ballot every 6 years. And if they have a layup shot every now and then, and let's be honest, Denise Majette, I guess, was 2010. That was not a serious race.
That was Michael Thurman.
That was Thurman in 2010.
Mm-hmm. And he would be more significant.
Sorry, you're a Republican.
2004 was Denise Majette.
But any time you see a long-term incumbent this late in a campaign under 50%, that usually spells big trouble.
But again, he's got an there is an assist in this. You've got Gary Johnson drawing off the Libertarian votes. Those votes could easily flow to Alan Buckley, and then we're looking at a Saxby Chambliss Jim Martin situation.
Well, go ahead, Ashley.
We've seen this before, but the difference here is Barksdale has resources. You know, I was speaking to one of Barksdale's senior folks probably about 2 hours ago. They feel very confident that they're within the striking distance, and they're going to dump money in this race, even if D.C. doesn't come to help. And money can make a difference. When you look back at all these other Democratic challengers, nobody had any money. Nobody could inject any cash to make it relevant. So I think Barksdale, it could be a real tight race.
And he just put $3 million of his own money into the campaign.
Yes, but Billy Linville, he didn't get any favors from your old friend Roy Barnes, who you worked for when he was governor of Georgia, who we learned today, thanks to Jim Galloway's political insider at AJC.com, wrote a check to Johnny Isaacson's campaign, as did former Democratic U.S. Senator Sam Nunn and David Scott, Democratic congressman from Georgia, endorsed Johnny Isaacson. Big help they are, Billy.
Well, I think Roy has written checks to some of his Republican friends throughout his
career. Roy Barnes said, as you know, that I think when Johnny Isaacson qualified, if all Republicans were like Johnny Isaacson, I'd be a Republican.
He made it very hard to recruit for this race. but let me toss something out here, Bill. Okay. All right. You've got Donald Trump. This week, he said many things this week, and
he says many things every week.
Yes, yes, and I'm sure we will be talking about. But to me, the absolute most politically damaging thing he said to as far as a Republican is concerned, is his refusal to endorse Paul Ryan, the U.S. House Speaker, and
Kelly Ayotte in a very tough race for her Senate seat in New Hampshire,
and John McCain,
which ironically probably helps Ryan.
I had to say it, but I think it helps Ryan.
No, we're not talking really about Ryan. Ryan, I think, is okay. But it's John McCain and the New Hampshire race where it could be her. Yeah. And that could jeopardize control of the U.S. Senate. And so, but you also have, you know, the bargain between congressional Republicans and Donald Trump is breaking down. And so you have Republican senators going their own way. And I think you see Johnny Isaacson doing that right now by bringing out Roy Barnes and Sam Nunn as kind of his insurance policy in this race.
All right. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want to look at what's happening nationally in terms of polling this week. Get your take on what it means about the presidential race. And probably even more important is what's going to change in the weeks ahead in the Clinton-Trump race. As we go to break, you can tweet us at PoliticsGPB. Some people are already doing that. Richard Flynn tweets, if Senator Isaacson doesn't run from his endorsement of Donald Trump, he'll lose his gentleman status. Mike Littlefield says, in Georgia, Hillary Clinton's path to victory could be paved by a libertarian. He said that before you made that point. So you and Michael are on the same page, Jim Galloway. It is 3:29. We're at Politics GPB. If you want to join the conversation, we'll be back after a break.
Every summer has its song. Hot air. Is this the summer song of 2016? Sold to one of the biggest names in hip-hop by the teenagers who created it.
No one really taught me how to make music. I just did my own little research.
Making a Summer Song, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on GPB.
Thank you for choosing Georgia Public Broadcasting and 18-station radio network. I'm Ellen Reinhart. You're listening to Political Rewind. GPB Atlanta is licensed to Georgia State University, ranked among the top universities in the nation in commitment to undergraduate teaching.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut. We're joined today by Mark Rountree. He is a pollster, primarily for Republican candidates in many levels. His firm, Landmark Communications, has always been kind of a gold standard. They've always done the kind of polling that tends to be reflected as fairly close to the final results, which, of course, is not always the case. So, Mark, we're glad you're with us today. Ashley Bell was a Cruz delegate at the Republican National Convention, and We haven't asked you, Ashley, whether you're ready to get behind Donald Trump or not. We'll get to that in a couple of minutes. Billy Linville, a Democratic strategist, is back at the table with us. And, of course, Jim Galloway, who is the political writer at the AJC. You read his column in the Thursday and Sunday newspaper, and he oversees the Political Insider blog at AJC.com. All right. So this week, yesterday, actually, at one of his campaign appearances, Donald Trump had this to say about his path to victory.
You know, the route to the White House for the Republicans is much more difficult. You know that. You look at the maps. You look at the maps. And yet, for me, not being your typical Republican, I guess, we have a lot of states in play right now that will never, I think we're going to do great in Michigan. Most Republicans would never even stop for dinner in some of these states. And you know what? It's sort of like I feel the same way about ISIS. I don't really want to tell you what the states are.
All right, that's Donald Trump. He didn't want to tell us what the states are. Michigan, he does say, is one of them.
Okay, I think there's only a list of 50. We could probably We could probably piece this out.
Well, Obama was up to 57 at one point. So.
Well, you know, he's going to at some point spend money in some of these states. We'll probably figure it out. But okay, so let's look. This has been a terrible polling week, clearly, for the Trump campaign. The Detroit News has a brand new poll out this week, which says, among other things, that 3 in 5 likely voters say that Trump is not qualified to be president, and Clinton led in their poll 41% to 32%. 600 likely voters, not a bad sample size. In New Hampshire, WMUR polled, they're the kind of the gold standard of TV stations in that state, in Manchester. Their poll shows Hillary Clinton up by 15 points over Trump. And not only does it show that, but it shows Kelly Ayotte, who we mentioned a minute ago, the incumbent Republican senator in a terribly tough fight, is losing to her opponent right now by 10 points. Pennsylvania, we saw polling from Franklin and Marshall College that showed Clinton over Trump 49% to 38%. I want to stop that for a second, Mark, because you're the pollster here. Sometimes we see polls from organizations that we don't really know much about, and yet they get a lot of attention. I don't mean to certainly disrespect Franklin and Marshall College, but I don't know what their methodology is. I don't know their track record. So I want to give a caution to our listeners who are hearing these numbers here, but also on the cable news networks. You got to be careful sometimes about what you conclude, right?
I like looking at polls that are conducted by people who starve to death if they aren't right. And that means a lot of times I always take a jaundiced eye to university-based polling, and I don't want to start a fight with university-based polling. I'm just saying there is there's a check and a double check and a triple check. And a lot of times I think you find that some of the less accurate polling is put on by colleges.
All right. Nevertheless, these numbers, Ashley, do not look good. Are you supporting Donald Trump now that the convention is over and you know for a fact that your man, Ted Cruz, is not? Not only is he not the nominee, the question is he ever going to be welcomed back into the party?
I don't know. I don't know if I'm good looking or bad. I started off, my first guy was Rand Paul, then I go to Marco Rubio. Yeah. I don't know if Donald Trump wants my support at this point, but I'm going to give it to him anyway and see what happens. I think that these numbers can get scary. If you see Donald Trump down 15 with some credible polls, like Mark is saying, and then you see him go double digits with Pennsylvania, Florida, Ohio, then I think you're going to see the red alert go off in D.C. And so will Donald Trump change the way he's campaigning? He believes in one thing, that's polls. And he's watching. And I think if he hits 15, 10, 10, and 10, everybody's saying that will be the point where you'll see a massive overhaul of the campaign and you'll see a turn in direction. But we aren't there yet.
Well, I think
you didn't answer the question of whether you're now supporting.
Oh, yeah, I am. I definitely.
Oh, okay.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Republicans have been waiting for months for Donald Trump to change, and he never changes. And I think these numbers are pretty startling. I think they are getting stronger and solidifying. And there's no reason that Trump has given us that he's going to change anything he's doing. He is continuing to be very irresponsible in his language and his conduct.
Yeah, I tell you, on polls, my theory on polls is you look at a lot of them and you kind of aggregate them all together. You kind of lump them. If you want to see a movement, you kind of take 5 to 10 to 20 polls and see where they're going. And then what you do is you don't pay attention to the numbers. You pay attention to the actions of the candidate.
Yeah, well,
The calendar matters more than the polls.
Yeah, and there are a spate of national polls from Fox News, from NBC, Wall Street Journal, and others who have done their national polling. And the real clear polling average, I think, has Clinton up by about 6 to 7 points right now. So, but that national race doesn't, what does that mean? That's the popular
vote. California's 90% for Clinton.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't.
But right now,
much.
all the aggregate polls show Hillary winning every single battleground state.
Well, I think
she is tied in Utah.
Well, that's only partially,
she's winning Arizona.
Only partially true. She might be ahead in them. Winning is not the operative term. They're not necessarily majorities. For example, in Pennsylvania, PPP, which is a far more credible source than Franklin and Marshall, in my personal opinion, only has Trump down by 4. And look, there is a new map that Trump has access to, essentially, to win because of his voting base that neither Romney, McCain, or Bush had. And that is an actual legitimate chance to win Michigan, an actual chance to win Pennsylvania. And that changes the map.
So we should point out, while we're talking about this movement, especially in terms of Georgia and where that race stands, Nate Silver has, 538 blog, which, I mean, Nate Silver, back in the days of the New York Times, was the guy who predicted every state correctly in the last presidential race. Mm-hmm. He's a heck of a prognosticator. Do we all agree on that? He shows Trump winning Georgia. He says there's a 71%, 71-29 that Donald Trump beats Hillary Clinton here in Georgia. But he does show Trump losing to Clinton all over the country.
And just 2 weeks ago, he said that there was a very good chance that Trump would win the whole thing. He's not putting his flag in the sand and saying, this is how it's going to be and I'm holding my position.
No.
Until
he's talking
He's saying
today.
Just as of today.
In the same way
the polls
that your polls are a snapshot.
That's right.
Okay. So I want to get to this notion of, Jim, before we get to the notion of whether Trump can change, I want to play some sound about that. Here's what's fascinating to me, and you start this, please, and everybody else weigh in. In a way, the race, we've gone through now the Republican and Democratic convention. We know from the polling that Clinton got a much bigger bump than Trump out of her convention. It's helped put her in a dominant position right now today. The Olympics, tonight is the opening ceremony. For the next couple of weeks, the country will focus on the Olympics. The first debate, presumably, unless Donald Trump decides to try to change everything, isn't until almost the end of September. What that means is, I think, is there's no major, this is now day-to-day campaigning and messaging by each campaign. No major event, unless something in the news intervenes, is going to change things much between now and the first debate, right?
That's what the normal pattern of things would be, yes. But I'm not sure that this is a normal year. I think you're going to, Donald Trump has just proven himself such a wonderfully talented strategist for getting on the cable news shows, which is where the voters are right now. I mean,
he gets good ratings.
Yeah, yes,
every time.
Yes, but
yes.
I don't think Fox News and CNN. Well, CNN maybe a little bit more, maybe covering the Olympics more. But I think, I think those news sites aren't going to disappear. I think you're going to see those still running through September.
If Donald Trump was pumping gas in Georgia, they would go to Donald Trump all day. If he's far more entertaining, he's far more interesting, and that's the part of the reason we're in this trouble we are now, because he says a lot. He says more than any other candidate. Hillary Clinton still hasn't done a press conference in, what, a year?
Oh, 8 months.
Okay, close enough.
Yeah. By the way, you might buy gas from Donald Trump, but there's a really interesting business story unfolding. A couple of news organizations have looked at Donald Trump's businesses right now. His occupancy rate at his properties is down like 15% since he joined the presidential race. If you think that it's polls that will turn around Donald Trump, I suggest it's the bottom line that might make him rethink how he communicates.
You now have national and serious Republicans who are talking openly about the need for an intervention with Donald Trump.
All right. With that in mind, the question here was, can Trump change? Let's listen, because this takes us into this conversation about Iran, which could be potentially damaging to Clinton, although I want to talk about why that seems strange to me. This is the story. The Wall Street Journal had it Monday, saying that at the time that our Navy officers who were captured, our sailors, rather, were captured by Iranian guards, there was an exchange of cash. $400 million in cash was sent to Iran. The Trump campaign argues that this was payment for the release of hostages. The president says this, the Wall Street Journal said this was a secret payment. Obama says, are you kidding? We talked about this when it happened. One way or the other, this is going to get litigated by the candidates and by the campaigns. But I bring it up now because I want to talk about whether Donald Trump can change. Here's what he said in a rally yesterday about this deal.
And you know, it was interesting because a tape was made, right? You saw that with the airplane coming in, nice plane. And the airplane coming in and the money coming off, I guess, right? That was given to us, has to be, by the Iranians. And you know why the tape was given to us? Because they want to embarrass our country. They want to embarrass our country. And they want to embarrass our president because we have a president who's incompetent.
All right, that was Trump yesterday. There is no tape. There is no tape that shows the money being dropped off. There is, in fact, a tape, of course, about the hostages getting off a charter jet as they come back to this country. Okay, but, you know, if you go back to I saw thousands of Muslims dancing in the streets in New Jersey after 9/11, Trump never backed away from that.
Yeah.
This morning, do you know what he did this morning?
He corrected himself on Twitter.
He tweeted, I don't have the exact tweet. Yeah. I was wrong.
He was wrong.
About, he said, I guess what I saw was the hostages returning. That is an earth-shaking moment for Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's a good sign. It's a good sign. You know, what would have been better if he would have talked about the issues and just said, look, why does this $400 million matter? Not because just the timing, but the fact that it shows that cash goes to the Iranians and this administration can't tell you that this money's not being used for terrorism. This money can kill cash right back into the street and buy bombs and bullets to be pointed at our soldiers tonight.
But
that
should have been the message. On that message.
And he should have been a message.
But to be clear, the facts are out there. The reason it was in cash is because the United States government does not have a banking relationship with Iran. So it had to be in cash. Secondly, this is due to a world court order in The Hague and from going back to the days of the Shah.
Do you not think
Iranian money
bad?
Was frozen?
Do you not think this looks bad for the Obama administration, no matter how you say it?
Horrible.
Horrible. Absolutely horrible.
If you don't know the facts, it looks horrible.
No, the facts are even horrible. The facts are, it's cash. The facts are cash on a plane. You cut a deal almost 6 months ago, and you couldn't do it then, but you did it at the same time, and you're exchanging hostages, and then these people can turn that money to give it to terrorists tonight?
All right. I have
it had to be in cash.
Okay, I get that. Okay, and we can play a soundbite of Obama talking about, I'm sorry, President Obama talking about that. But here's what I'd rather do, Billy Lidville. You know, we've spent an awful lot of time, all of us who blab for a living about politics, talking about how could Donald Trump make all these mistakes? How could he be so stupid? He doesn't get on med, blah, blah, blah. All right. So the Wall Street Journal publishes the Iran payment. And Hillary Clinton does an interview with a local TV station somewhere. I'm not sure. I can remember where she was. And she's asked about it. And here's what she says.
And so far as I know, it had nothing to do with any kind of hostage swap or any other tit for tat. It was something that was intended to, as I am told, pay back Iran for contracts that were canceled when the Shah fell.
Okay, so, Billy, this payment was made 3 years after Hillary Clinton left her job as Secretary of State. It may have been more than 3 years. Help me understand this as a political strategist. Why isn't your answer to that question, you'll have to talk to the Obama administration. At that point, I was out. That seems to me to be a miscalculation, because once again, it puts her in a position of explaining, and people don't believe her when she explains.
Oh, Bill, you make a very good point. She should have said exactly what you suggested.
I don't know that she could have. I mean, she is, look, she's
and Obama, tied at the hip
she
to
and
Obama.
Obama have exchanged hugs. That means something. That means, I mean, she has been running for the last almost a year now as an extension of the Obama administration. So I don't think she can separate herself.
Yeah, Ashley, I think Jim Galloway said an important thing. She's tied at the hip to President Obama, even though she wasn't part of that whole process.
Look, Hillary Clinton has a problem with just being conceived as a liar. I don't think that's just because she's part of the Obama administration. You can go all the way back to when she was lying about getting shot at off the airway in Bosnia and fake bullets flying everywhere, and none of that was true. This administration has helped her in this regard. The convention she came out and consolidated African-American vote. I honestly think that Bernie Sanders was doing pretty well amongst African-American liberals until the convention. That hug sealed the deal. Everybody who I know was with Bernie said, okay, Obama said we got to be with Hillary. We got to be with Hillary. So you got to take the good and the bad.
Mark, how do you imagine an issue like this plays as we move forward? Let me preface
it by
saying
just one of a bunch.
Okay.
I think it's one of a bunch.
Do we all agree at this table, before we take another break, that, you know, the Democrats have done an awfully good job. The Trump campaign is coming unraveled. Is Donald Trump in his right mind? I mean, this messaging is getting out there. There are even Republican or conservative-leaning columnists like Peggy Noonan in the Wall Street Journal raising questions about whether Trump is stable or not. But can we all agree, having been involved in politics or covering it for a long time, don't we have to take a deep breath and say, there's a lot of time
it's
left?
It's August. That's what I was going to say. It's August.
It's August, and he's not a politician. That's the reason he's here. We quote a lot of politicians.
There are virtually daily, if not literally daily, bombings and killings all over the world, and the Obama administration is viewed as absolutely incompetent in doing something about it, and Clinton is joined at the hip, per your words. Rightly or wrongly, that's the view, and the question will be, what happens in October?
But let's be clear, President Obama is the most popular man in America now. He has a 54% approval rating, the highest of his presidency. So it's advantageous for Hillary Clinton.
That's like
to be
arguing Justin Bieber is a popular dude too. I mean, seriously,
you wouldn't be saying that if Barack Obama had George Bush number.
He's not the most popular Obama,
so I don't know what that means.
Jim, you and I have covered politics for a very, very long time. We have seen this kind of ebb and flow. The world is ending. Everything is in flames. Oh, guess what? That candidate has been resurrected, and suddenly it's the other candidate who's on the defensive.
Right, right. I mean, and look, just before the conventions, Hillary was having a very, very bad June, mm-hmm. just with the FBI report. That has completely flipped. Now the problem is, as you were pointing out a few minutes ago, we only have a few number of events now that can actually reshape this race. Our numbers are going down in that sense. And a candidate who leaves the convention behind in the polls has, generally speaking, lost in November. That's just the general path.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. We're going to watch. I mean, at Labor Day comes, the race suddenly gets very serious, and then the first debate. And clearly, if Trump cannot make a mark in that first debate, then you do start saying, uh-oh, if you're a Republican, this thing is over. And then we're going to see Republican candidates in down-ballot races fleeing like crazy, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's no margin for error on the first debate. Absolutely none. Donald Trump has to come out and be poised. And he has to be careful. He can't have a Rick Lazio moment like with Hillary when she was running for Senate, be too aggressive and be seen as this bully. He has to change the way he approaches Hillary in there face-to-face. You can't talk to her the same way you do when she's not in the room.
Right.
It just can't happen.
All right. We have to take our last break of the show. But as we do, you know, Donald Trump, he's nothing if not consistent. The primaries were rigged against him. The Democratic primaries were rigged against Bernie Sanders. And now the general election may very well be rigged against him, too. But here's what President Obama said when asked about that at the Pentagon at his news conference yesterday.
Of course, the elections will not be rigged. What does that mean? The federal government doesn't run the election process. States and cities and communities all across the country they're the ones who set up the voting systems and the voting booths. And if Mr. Trump is suggesting that there is a conspiracy theory that is being propagated across the country, that's ridiculous. That doesn't make any sense. And I don't think anybody would take that seriously.
I think he's being a little paranoid there, just because when Donald Trump said the system's rigged, he always thought he was talking about him. Well, but he said the federal government has anything to do with that. He's so used to everybody blaming him, he just thought he was being blamed again.
But I will tell you, there is, look, just I'm going to find some truth in Donald Trump's statements. We've had voter ID laws in four states, Texas, North Carolina, Wisconsin, and North Dakota, parts of which their voter ID laws were overturned by courts or all of them. All of the law. That's what Trump in later statements said he was referring to. And I will tell you what, we haven't talked about that this bill, but
you're right.
But especially in North Carolina, you could have 100,000 more eligible voters in that contest, and presuming that most of them are Democrat, that could have a huge impact.
All right, so Jim makes the point that federal judges are part of the conspiracy against Donald Trump.
Not rigged.
Trump.
No, I'm saying they're part of the soup here.
All right, look, who are these 100,000 people with no ID?
I really used that to try to have a kind of a lighter moment with the president saying this is ridiculous to take a break. You all wanted to engage, so we did. But we do need to take a break. When we come back, I want to do a follow-up to a story that Jim Galloway wrote about Wednesday on his blog, but then talked about an hour later on our air, and whoops, it suddenly changed after both of those things. This is Political Rewind at 3:52.
Hey, it's Peter Sagal. Having your car towed is never a good feeling unless it means more public radio. Donate your unwanted car and help support this public radio station. Watch your car get towed away and feel good about it.
Go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR and thanks.
We're back on Political Rewind. Jim Galloway, my wingman here, the AJC's political writer, Billy Linville, Democratic strategist, Ashley Bell, Republican attorney, and Mark Rountree, Landmark Communications pollster, mostly for Republican candidates, but he does these very straightforward polls for WSB TV, and we'll see his polls, I think, pretty frequently. I hope you got a good contract with my old boss over there, Mark. Jim Galloway. Wednesday late morning, I think, you posted a blog about a guy named Bauke Vu. Bauke Vu, I apologize. Bauke Vu was named at the Republican convention to be an elector for Donald Trump.
Yeah, one of 16 electors.
In Georgia.
For one of 16 Republican electors. He's a, if you know him, he's a wonderful guy, longtime hardcore Republican. His family are refugees from Vietnam. They fled before the fall of Saigon. I mean, that's how far back his Republican credentials go back. And he's put out an email Wednesday morning saying, I'm not going to vote for Donald Trump in November. I can't bring myself to do it. And he laid out his reasons why. But he also mentioned that he was an elector. And that changes the thing. So I gave him a call. I called him up and I said, look, you know, Bauke, what does this mean? If Donald Trump carries Georgia, and in December you're assembled in the Capitol to cast your electoral ballot, will you cast it for Trump? And he says, I'm looking into that.
All right, so
he didn't say that he would not. He did say, as I understand it from him personally, I've spoken to him. He did say that it was he had reservations.
Okay,
is that fair to say?
He raised the possibility that he would not.
All right, so Jim, you published that online, and then we talked about it at 2 o'clock on Wednesday. And about, I got home, and I suddenly had a news release from the state Republican Party.
Yeah,
by
5 o'clock, Bauke Vu and state GOP Chairman John Padgett had a joint press release.
I'm not going to be an elector, and John Padgett congratulated him for that decision. Let's listen to what Mr. Vu told MSNBC.
There's definitely a risk there. I have been heartened by the fact that many of my Republican colleagues have actually expressed their concerns and their support for what I'm saying. And when you get down to it, I think the American people, we have to trust the American people as the ultimate arbiters of our leadership. And in this case, while we may be frustrated and angry about the direction of this country, you know, frustration and anger are not active principles to base our platform on. It should be based on the ideas that, you know, Speaker Ryan and Leader McConnell have set forth over time already.
Jim, never let it be said that the political insider blog and this show can't get action.
I've known Bauke for more than 30 years. He was a college Republican back at Georgia Tech. He wasn't at Georgia Tech, but we would actually go down to Georgia Tech together to meet with others. And the guy is a solid Republican. And I think his maybe error in this, it may not even been an error, but is he was voicing out loud what a lot of Republicans think and what a lot of Democrats think about their nominee. It's not maybe common coming from an elector, but I think a lot of people in both parties are feeling the same thing about their nominees.
But he gave us a good constitutional lesson, and that is that we don't elect presidents by popular vote.
Yeah. Well, we
in this state.
Not
by direct. Right. Georgia has no law that binds electors to the candidate who wins.
So what's the over under that changes this session in January?
Well, I think that's pretty well baked into the Constitution, isn't it?
No, that they bind them.
Oh, that they bind
them. If Trump were to win this,
There are 21 states that don't require electors to be bound. Thank you for bringing that up.
Right. If Trump were to win this, it would be probably by a fairly close electoral margin in the first place. You mentioned Real Clear Politics a bit ago. There are 154 electoral votes of the 270, theoretically, that they need, that Real Clear is giving to Trump automatically. If you add Missouri, North Carolina, Georgia, and Arizona, probably all of which actually do go Republican in the end, that's 206. Trump either needs to carry, these are simple numbers. In the past, it's been Florida, Ohio, Virginia, and then plus one small state. He rewrites the map, and it's Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, plus a small state.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see if this Rust Belt-style strategy that gets white working voters to the polls in larger numbers than
that's going to be his better path.
Right, right. Okay, we're out of time. I'm sorry we got to end the conversation, but it was great. Mark Rountree, thank you so much for sharing with us your data and your insights about this race. Ashley Bell.
Thank you.
Great having you in the studio. Yeah. Thank you for being here. Come back. Billy Linville, you know we love having you on. And Jim Galloway, thank you. Again, call us at 678-757-4472. Tell us why you would like to be part of our on-air focus group about the presidential race and probably the Senate race and other political issues that we want to talk about. 678-757-4472. Leave a message. Make it short. Give us contact information. Trevor Young, our producer, is looking through all of the... We got a lot of people, and Trevor's going to weed through them, and we're going to try to pick a group. Tyler Morris is sitting there running the board, getting people's mics turned on and off. Thank you, Tyler, for your help today. Hannah Rose Adams, our intern, she blogs for Political Rewind and does a lot of other work on our behalf. And our senior producer, Jenny Ament, stands across from me in the control room and tells me what to do next. Thank you, Jenny, for that. Thanks to all of you for a great week. We'll see you next Wednesday at 2 o'clock for another Political Rewind.